Welcome into Smooth Operators with your hosts, Noah, Griggs, and Ben, going through the world of Formula One.
If you want to interact with the show today, you can tweet at us at Noah_Phillips, at Junior_McClurkin, and at TheGriggsB. It's time for the green flag, and it's lights out, and away we go.
Hello and welcome in. It is Friday at 1 o'clock. It feels like forever since we've been in these seats. Griggs Blankenberg is not here. My name's Noah Phillips. The other man joining me in the broadcast booth is the one and only Ben McClurkin. And Ben,
hello.
We might be out of a job.
Why is that?
The one and only Gunther Steiner has started a column on F1.com. How long is it before he starts a podcast and puts every single F1 podcaster out of work?
I could see that happening in the next two seasons. His development's been looking really strong as a member of the media. That's really interesting stuff, though. Glad to see he's doing some English writing as well as his German broadcasts. So good to see him doing a thing that he's good at, which is talking.
Then we're going to do one of the things that we're good at, which is also talking.
Yes, it is.
And we're going to hit a little bit on the Bahrain Grand Prix.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
It was.
Then we're going to hop into the most recent of news involving that Jeddah Grand Prix. First of all, Bahrain won by Max Verstappen.
Yes.
Hands out to that kid. Could not believe he did it this time.
Yeah.
Fantastic job.
Couldn't have had a better race weekend in Bahrain. Pole position, you know, just pole position, fastest lap, and the win for Verstappen in Bahrain. You know, Red Bull has really looked strong at the start of this season, and I just, you know, some big winners will obviously be Red Bull. And yeah, I mean, We did kind of touch on it in the previous episode of our podcast that is on YouTube, but you can definitely see who's got it and who has not, and it's a surprising thing to see the teams that you expected to take a step forward taking a step back, and some of the teams that were in the pack have not advanced on Red Bull's gap at all. So it seems as if Red Bull is just expanding their domination even further this season, just because of how not necessarily how much more superior they are than everybody else, but it's the same level of superiority, but the other teams have taken a step back.
And one of the takeaways from this was obviously, like you said, just how dominant Red Bull was and how it seems that other teams have taken a step back. My big thing going into the year was, okay, Max is probably going to dominate, but I didn't think Perez was going to be as dominant as he is. He's had top twos, finishing in second. I remember our good friend of the show, Alex Husting, texted me a while back after the first race, I believe, and said, yeah, this is going to be a boring season. And I said, well, you just keep watching that second spot, because I think if Sergio kind of falls off like I think he will, we could have an opportunity there where a Ferrari just keeps getting second and thirds and eventually closes that gap in the team race. Of course, Max would be your driver's champion, but Ferrari, which, you know, I'm not just talking as a fan here, but as a observant as well. I think Ferrari really had an opportunity to get those second and thirds every race day and really take the fight for the team constructor instead of just the drivers. But looks like I was wrong in that.
Yeah.
Wrong in that guess by a long shot, as it looks like Sergio Perez will be finishing out in that second place nearly every week.
It's good to see Perez back on pace. As exciting as it would have been for somebody to come replace him. I'm glad to see him doing well. You know, you don't like to see a driver that's good struggle. And I mean, I'd say he's not the best driver on the grid, but he's certainly, you know, a good enough teammate for Max. And I think he just needs to understand that he's going to get beaten pretty comprehensively throughout the season. But yeah, it's good to see him back. You know who's not back? Alpine. They are
the opposite of back. They are back markers. They are bad. They are not a good race team. They are awful. Other ways to say that. You can probably come up with them in your head, but they are Not good.
If I was an Alpine staffer, I would be hitting the high road right now. And a lot of them have, actually. Their technical CTO, their chief technical officer, has stepped down along with several other key staff. No surprises there. It's just going downhill so fast. And I mean, you know, they weren't strong last year, but this year they have just, I don't know. It's been bad. They've just really been bad. I don't know how else to describe it. You know, and like they're the third worst team in F1 right now. And they're not performing with the works teams, or they're the fourth works team, because Mercedes is also a works team. But you've got Red Bull, technically, Mercedes, Ferrari, and Alpine as engine manufacturers. And I don't know, man. There's something going on with Alpine. I'm kind of glad Andretti didn't get approved to join if they were going to use the Renault engines from Alpine, because they would have been in a dire situation. I mean, like, I guess that's probably why F1 didn't approve it, because it would have been so bad for them to start out with such a terrible, terrible engine supplier. I mean, there's no other way I can see it now. I mean, they are just so bad.
Yeah, they are. I don't really get what you do there unless you completely blow it up and get new sponsors and get a new team. I mean,
you want to get rid of Ryan Reynolds?
Is he not paying enough?
No, he's paying enough.
He's got to pay.
They're paying a lot. They're paying a lot of money to that team for them not to do well. That's what I'm saying. Like, the amount of money that they have, the size that they're at. I mean, like, there's no excuse. There's no excuse to be a works manufacturer and be the worst team on the grid. Like, they are the worst.
Listen, man.
I don't understand.
I don't know. Let's see. Who we got here? Deadpool 3 is coming out. I don't know how good that's going to do at the box office for Ryan Reynolds.
I mean, I've heard
Reynolds.
A lot of people be very excited. It was the most viewed commercial ever.
Well, is that going to equate to good business at the box office, though?
Yes, absolutely.
Which will then affect how good it is at how much money Ryan Reynolds is able to give. Because he's also got to give money to a soccer club.
Yeah.
That's... I don't even know how soccer works. I was going to make a joke about it, but I don't even know if it makes sense.
That's all right. That's what we have Griggs for. He knows how English soccer works.
Well,
I know how.
He's not here.
I know how American soccer works, and I know how American football works, but, like, no, I don't really understand how English clubs work. But from my limited understanding, I think that they are moving up in the English league, so they're, like, on their way.
They're getting closer to the point where Ryan Reynolds is going to have to do more than just throw money at it.
I mean, I don't know. I think you can always throw money at it in soccer. The more money you have, the better players you can get is what it seems.
As we've seen here with Formula One, Ryan Reynolds throwing his money at the Alpine team has not equated a whole heck of a lot.
No. That's because of cost caps. But, you know, I'm sure if he had enough money, he could pay for that team to get to the top. But, you know, there's always stories of teams that spend the most and don't get the result. But I think Alpine is just an organizational failure. Like, comprehensively, in a team size disaster is what Alpine is. You know, I've never seen anything like it, really. But, you know, I've only had a limited amount of time. And as a fan in F1, I just can't think of works teams being the slowest on the grid. Like, there have been absolutely terrible ones, right? You had Honda, you had Toyota, and Toyota wasn't horrible. Ford as Jaguar was underwhelming. But see, like, all of those teams got a podium at some point, even when they were struggling. And I think Alpine, you know, they've gotten podiums, and Esteban Ocon had that win 2 years ago. But how did they go from there to here so quickly?
Yeah, and we see it now. Yeah. Some of it might have been just getting rid of their team principal last year. I think that could have been easily avoided if they hadn't done that. And I get that maybe he wasn't giving you the results that you wanted, But when you just immediately tear down leadership like that,
yeah,
it sends bad messages to the rest of the company and the rest of the team. And now with the guy they got now, of course, he was already there for a long time. Of course, Bruno Famlin, I hope I'm getting his name right. He seemed really mean in that in the documentary they made on Netflix about it. But I hope he doesn't come after me. with him it's there, fine, yeah. He seems like he knows what he's doing, but he has to get through so much stuff, because when leadership like that comes down, you can't just easily take over it and just it goes back to running as smoothly, especially in the middle of the season like it did last year, where you're not only worried about building for the future, but you're worried about building for next week.
Yeah. Man, what I've seen is the lack of consistency in their leadership structure, plus the lack of hands-off leadership from their senior leadership. So, like, the people who work for Alpine organization, not the race team. They tend to interfere in the in-team stuff, so it creates a lot of infighting and politicking. And so that's led to what we have today. An F1 team, in order to be successful, doesn't just need to have the best engineers and the best drivers, because, yes, as technical as F1 is, it's also a mental sport. And when you have people who are brilliant working under excessive amounts of stress, you see a decline in their product. And also, think about an F1, right? You've got 3 months, 4 months to turn out a new car every season now that the season has gotten so long. And yeah, you start on that during the season, but you're also working on upgrades. So you're under an immense workload. Plus now you have people, there's a revolving door of senior leadership. And so you create this environment where, yeah, it's not like every other sport. This is like building an aircraft. It's that level of complexity. It's not like soccer, where, yeah, if you don't win, you can fire your manager. This isn't the same, you know. It's not results-based. It's environment-based. And when the environment sucks, like it does at Alpine, you're going to keep seeing this level of catastrophic underperformance.
Yeah, and it's like you said, building types of airplanes. It's not like where you take over as the manager of a soccer or football club, and it's like, okay, all we have to do is manage the players and manage the personalities and stuff like that. Managing the personalities of an athlete is very, very different than managing the personalities and thoughts and desires of a mechanic or a engineer or somebody that takes the phone calls there at the front desk. That's a very, very different thing than just managing a football player, an athlete, or something like that. And then you throw the drivers into the mix, who have a very, very different mentality from regular athletes, I feel like. As the regular athlete just wants to be the best, get the most money they can, and win championships, you have drivers out here who I think are trying to prove more to themselves by beating their teammates and stuff like that, where you want them to work together, but in reality, they can't.
Yeah.
The winner's circle only has room for one car.
Right.
And you got two of them out there, and you have to be able to hope and pray that teamwork prevails in getting one car to the spot.
Right. And that's all well and good, but if you don't have the engineering department on the side of the boys that are on the track, or those guys on the same page, when they're not on the same page, when there's a disconnect, you just don't get the results, you know? And, you know, that's all we'll say about that. But
talking about being on the same page.
Yeah.
Me and you, Ben.
We are.
We're going to have to be on the same page.
We are.
And go to a quick 2-minute PSA break. Do not go anywhere, folks. We'll be back with more coverage of Formula One when we get back after this.
We are back. We are cruising. We are bruising. We're keeping it smooth as the smooth operators do. I'm Ben.
Beautiful. That's smash poetry right there, brother.
Joining me today is Noah, and we are going to talk a little bit more about Jeddah. So I was expressing my, you know, discontentment at Alpine's performance in the last episode, but you know who did really good, Noah, and somebody you did not predict to be on the podium or driving?
Who did I say?
Oliver Bearman. He came in after Carlos Sainz was diagnosed with appendicitis. And honestly, props to Carlos for doing like push sessions in the free practice 1 and 2, like while having appendicitis. That's insane. but
he cares about his stuff. He's
yeah,
to fight for the
that's
pain.
Like, have you had appendicitis?
I have not.
I've heard it's really painful.
Yeah, I've heard it's really painful as well.
So not to get too sidetracked, yeah. So Carlos Sainz goes out. They notify this kid, Oliver Bearman, who is old enough to be a college freshman. He is 18 years of age, and he has just completed his qualifying session for F2. Gets pole. Ferrari says, "Hey, kid, come drive our car." He says, "All right." And he gets in the car in FP3. And he drives around, does okay. He says, "Take this padding off. I can handle the G." They take the padding off, and he handles the G. And he gets out there in qualifying and is super close, like less than 1/100th of a second off of knocking Lewis Hamilton out of Q3, but was held up by a Haas going around. So he gets to the race. He starts 11th, moves his way up to 8th, finishes 8th, ahead of Lewis Hamilton, ahead of Lando Norris. Very, very impressive stuff from him, and one heck of a debut. It was very awesome. But he's created a bit of a predicament for Ferrari. What are they going to do now that they have 3 drivers next season, and 2 that are pretty desirable?
Yeah, I think the best course of action for Ferrari is to pay whatever money they need to the FIA and get 3 cars on track.
Yeah.
I think that'd be the best course of action. And in reality, though, folks, I think Ollie is going to be a fantastic driver for wherever he races at. Obviously, finishing P7th at Jeddah, one of the toughest race courses in the world, or especially that Formula One drives at, shows that he has some great instincts and some great, just a great ability to drive, especially only being 18, being younger than me and you, Ben. That's a terrible feeling. I don't want to ever feel that again.
3 years younger than us.
Oh God. I'm never going to accomplish anything in my life. But Ollie Bearman, going back to the subject at hand, I think has the opportunity here to hold all the cards to his chest and really has an opportunity to maybe go get paid a little bit and go maybe to – obviously, I don't think Ferrari is going to pick him up this year or next year or something like that. But, you know, if he wants to wait around and continue being in the F1 or the Ferrari Driver Academy, he has an opportunity to take over – whenever Lewis finishes, probably in 4 or 5 years. But if he doesn't want to do that, and I wouldn't blame him, should maybe look at going to Aston Martin, somewhere like that, maybe taking over for Alonso whenever he finishes, because you know his clock is ticking as well. Maybe you go out and you take a Mercedes seat, or maybe you take that Red Bull seat whenever Max Verstappen leaves due to due to issues off the track.
Which we will touch upon later.
We will touch upon that later. If you continuously show up and you show out in this Ferrari car, you have an opportunity to leapfrog going to the lower. Another great place he could go is McLaren. He's a British racing driver.
I'm sure they would be happy to have him.
They'd be really happy to have him, especially
as an Australian team.
Oh, come on.
Come on. I know. They're based in Brackley, whatever.
Come on. You see those pops that they get whenever they go out there for Silverstone, and they're led by an American Hollywood lawyer, all right?
That's something else, isn't it?
That isn't it. So, folks, I have finally watched Drive to Survive. I got to tell you, Zach Brown is nothing but a Hollywood lawyer working for a major corporation.
Are you joking?
I'm not joking. If you, like, watch him.
He's like a Hollywood lawyer character.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane how, like, well he could play that. He could do that, honestly. What were we even talking about? Ollie Berman.
I just see McLaren being at the top in 2027. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm just a small-town bird lawyer. But, you know, maybe Lando leaves and goes to one of those top three teams. That could be a great spot for the Bear Man, who has a fantastic logo, by the way.
It's so cool.
It's an O with a bear in it. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. But, like I said, he has the potential to get some cards to his chest and play where he wants to go.
Yeah, I mean, he could pull a Piastri. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
How crazy would that be? Haas announces him and he says, "It has come to my attention that Haas, without my permission, has announced me." How crazy would that be? Like the exact quote from Piastri's thing, but from Behrman about Haas.
I am not going to Haas. I'm sorry, all you Haas maniacs out there.
I will not be driving for Haas next season.
That's gonna be a heck of a column from Gunther Steiner if that happens. That'll be hilarious.
Oh man. Yeah, I mean, he really blew my mind. For such short notice, I think he may have done better than Liam Lawson. He may have done better than he definitely did better than Nick DeVries on debut. Not by much. Remember, Nick DeVries drove a Williams to the points on his debut. So, you know, not as impressive. However, I mean, I was really impressed with what he did.
I think everybody was impressed with what he did, finishing not only finishing 7th, but starting in 11th, passing at a circuit that, yeah, it's probably easier to pass than at Monaco and stuff like that, but
it's still a street circuit.
It's still a street circuit, and it's still really, really tight with a whole lot of fast corners.
Yeah.
So it's probably one of the most impressive things I can remember since being a fan of this sport.
I mean, yeah, man, blew me away. A lot of driver transfers and a lot of spots that are going to open up in the silly season that's coming this summer. There could be quite a bit of drama. What do we think about possibly an opening at Red Bull?
Son, we got 5 more minutes left on this.
I know.
Segment.
Let's split it up.
Okay.
Let's get what you think, and then we'll talk more about it after. Because we can't just talk about nothing for 5 minutes. This is weighing heavy on my mind.
Talk about something else. Maybe talk about the fact that Williams will score points at some point this year. But I'm kidding.
Yeah,
kidding.
I guess we could.
Kidding, folks. But like you said, that's actually a better topic than what I was going to bring up.
Yeah.
If Max Verstappen leaves Red Bull.
Which could happen. And we will explain why after.
Money could go away for that team. Huh. When money goes away for that team, are they going to be able to continuously make the same great car that they've been making? Probably not. Because, you know, Max Verstappen right now is probably the face of Formula One, despite the fact he has the persona of a Disney villain. If that happens, do we look at the big three actually competing four titles, unlike how it's just been the Red Bull show for the past 3 years. So I think that happens. It'd become a great show for two more years, and then somebody would fill that gap. Maybe it's where Max Verstappen goes, and they finally figure out how to make the car a whole lot better using that Max Verstappen money that I'm sure he'll bring in from being a two-time world champion. Will it be the Ferrari who is about to get one of the highly advertised drivers of Formula One in Lewis Hamilton and already has a great face in Charles Leclerc? Is it a dark horse like McLaren or somebody who has had some good finishes? They're on an upward trajectory. They have some great drivers there, some great young drivers.
Don't overlook Mercedes.
Or do you go with a past favorite in Mercedes who could find somebody to fill that gap with Lewis Hamilton, and maybe George Russell just becomes a good bit faster, and the Silver Arrows fly once again? Nobody knows. If Max Verstappen leaves, Formula One could become the most interesting sport for two straight years, then somebody will go back to dominating it. But I have to imagine this is what Liberty Media want.
Yeah.
You'd have to imagine that part. They definitely want it. I think that drives ratings up and drives merch sales and drives all that sort of stuff up. Netflix probably wants it as well.
Probably.
And I'll be honest with you, good people, I probably want it too. Because it'd be real, real interesting to watch it and unfold it and talk about it on this great podcast. If it happens, I think the sport has nowhere to go but up. And Red Bull has nowhere to go but now.
Wow.
I think if that does happen, Red Bull becomes a snowball rolling downhill. If you know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about.
That just creates a web that they won't be able to escape from, and they'll just continuously roll downhill. And Ben, I don't want to cut you off before you say something about it as well, but we're going to have to go to a break. When we come back, we'll discuss why.
That's okay. I had nothing to say.
There could be a potential split over at Red Bull. Do not go anywhere, folks. You're listening to Week 91.1 FM. Welcome back into Smooth Operators. Before the break, me and Ben were talking about what will happen if there's a split of Max Verstappen from the Red Bull brand. Now, we're going to talk about maybe why that split might happen. Of course, we cannot give you the details of it, but what we can tell you is that things have gone awry in the Red Bull Mechanics Lounge. Not even the Mechanics Lounge, probably the big old meeting tables.
The executive
lounges. There we go. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you, Ben. But this could be bad. This could be really bad. I did find a really, really cool graphic that I got to pull up. I found it on Twitter. I believe Red Bull Daily posted it.
RBR Daily?
RBR Daily posted it.
Great Twitter page.
The rumored power struggle at Red Bull has been summarized by NU.NL.com. I believe that is a
Netherlands.
German?
Netherlands.
Netherlands, okay.
The German one would be .de.
.ed, okay.
.de.
Got you. See, I don't know these things. Thank you, Ben.
You're welcome.
But I do recommend you go check that out. It gives a pretty good graphic. Don't have to unless you don't want to. But as you can see here, you have the Mark Manitz, who's 49% owner of Red Bull, who is currently in a power struggle with the 51% engineer, Charlem Vodja, and is currently very tensed with Christian Horner and is also involved in a power conflict with Helmut Marko, the advisor for Red Bull over there, as well with as Helmut Marko is also friends with Max Verstappen. You have father and son with Jos Verstappen. Christian Horner hates Jos Verstappen. Maybe he doesn't hate, so that's not the correct word, but the CEO is also very tense with Christian Horner, yeah. And it is just a web of tenseness and red lines that would not go very well in a normal type of business.
No. So, for some background, Red Bull used to be owned by two people, or I guess three people. Dietrich Mateschitz of Austria and the Thai owners from Thailand that Dietrich co-founded Red Bull with when he got the recipe for the energy drink that he tried to fix his jet lag. Anyway, whole story, great story. Check it out on your own. Anyway, when Mr. Mateschitz died, his ownership of the company was split between two parties, both of them Austrian. And both of those Austrian folks weren't super crazy about Christian Horner. And the Thai owners are. They love Horner because he wins race, or he gets results. You know, he makes them look good. And so Mateschitz decides, well, since the Thai owners aren't crazy about Horner, I better align myself with the Austrian owners because I'm Austrian. So that is what he did. Following this, some very serious things came out about Christian Horner misbehaving in the workplace, we'll just say. And yeah, there hasn't been a whole lot of information from Red Bull about it. However, there was a leak of some things that happened, some things that were allegedly said. However, those have been disproven or debunked by several sources. I'm not really sure what to make of all of it. But, anywho, now things have gotten very serious because Max Verstappen has heard that Helmut Marko's job could be at risk. And he said, if Helmut goes, I go. Horner publicly responded to this in a press conference and said he's allowed to go if he wants. However, that's kind of backtracking on what he said previously, which is, yeah, Max is staying until 2028 or whatever his contract said, which is pretty funny. There's a little bit of a change in literature from Christian Horner. So, I don't know, man.
This is not a...
Things are looking a little strange.
So this is not a representation of the more things change, the more they stay the same. No, things have changed over in the Red Bull paddock.
Yep.
Things are currently rolling downhill and rolling very, very fast. Things could go off very, very quickly. The dynamite could explode. The TNT could go off, and we could be looking at a major failure here from Red Bull to keep a championship winning team together.
Yeah.
And if that happens, the margin or who's going to win every single Sunday becomes wide, wide open.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard the father of Max Verstappen, Jos Verstappen, say, well, he might need to leave, which is insane. Because you're at a championship-winning team, and even throughout the many PR disasters your team is currently going through, the team is still winning. So just how bad is it over in that paddock? We do not know. We are not invited to the Red Bull paddocks. Wish we were. But it's just such a delicate, delicate situation for them at Red Bull. And it's looking like things could get really, really bad.
Yeah.
And they've started to get really, really bad.
They have. I mean, I don't really know the level of how things are, but it's definitely concerning If I was Red Bull to hear these things said, hear these things coming out, and I think Red Bull has mistakenly acted as if nothing is happening. Right? They're not really doing a whole lot to disprove anything other than saying, oh yeah, well it's business as usual. Well, it's not business as usual. Either it's this is wrong and this is improper, and you know, these allegations are false. Or and like actually doing something about it publicly. And then you could also, you know, fire the guy because of what happened, if they're true. But there's nothing really going on from them. And we as fans aren't obligated to know what's happening, but I sure do wish that they would do a better job of telling us what's going on, because from what it seems, it's pretty serious.
Especially when you have something where the Independent and other sources report that the person that might be bringing those allegations to the light has been suspended with pay.
Yeah, for not telling the truth.
Yeah, which I get to. I understand wanting to suspend a person, especially if it may be false.
And what if that person is a great employee of the team? You know, it complicates things for sure.
And it really does. It just, when you find out something like that from independent sources that are not your own, and you do it with pay, and you've already heard everything about the father of your top driver saying you need to leave there, coming right out and saying it. Of course,
you're talking about Verstappen's Horner, right?
Who?
You're talking about Horner.
No, Jos Verstappen.
Yeah, Jos said that about Horner.
Yeah, about Horner.
Yeah.
And, of course, we've known that Jos Verstappen is not exactly the most sunshine and rainbows type person ever to grace an F1 paddock. But that's still worrisome, especially for that Red Bull team. And I guess we've said that a lot. But just needing to hammer home the point that things do not look good over in Red Bull land.
No, they don't. And you know what? I just wish I could get more honesty from them. I don't know. There just seems to be like if you want to defend Horner, step up and defend him. If you want to fire him because of what he's done, get him out. But to sit here and do nothing and for there to be, like, his wife arriving at the racetrack as, like, a defiant display, you know, like, whatever. I don't know. I'm just not impressed.
Yeah, I'm not impressed either. Of course, I get not wanting to be the most, like, forward with it from just a business point of view, but at the same time, no. I mean, come on.
No, yeah, you're a sports team.
You're a sports team. Things are going to come out. You might as well meet them head on as fast as you can. Even if it's just doing something simple like a PR statement that, you know, try to just be – I don't know. I do not know. One thing that I do know, Ben, is we got to take a PSA. We do know that, and we will see you.
It's true.
In just a couple minutes, reminder, folks, you're listening to Smooth Operators on Weagle 91.1 FM. We're going to have a fantastic topic for you whenever we get back. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to the Smooth Operators Podcast. And as we are coming to you from the WEGL studios here, I have found something interesting. And it might be a little bit troubling for fans of a certain team. And if you've been following this team for a long time, you know that they were once the top dog. And now they are a sleeping giant. We are talking a little bit about Mercedes here in this section. And I want to know what they have been doing wrong. What's going on here? Because if you look at the average pace, they're fifth fastest on a single lap. They're pretty far behind Red Bull. Because, I mean, yeah, of course they are. But you're starting to see the same problems that they had last year, which is strange because they went with a completely different car concept and still they're seeing the same nagging problems, right? Like high-speed corners. If you watch the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, you would know, or you might remember, you might recall that Lewis Hamilton was chasing Lando Norris down. Do you remember this, Noah? Do you remember this moment?
I do remember this moment, yes.
And Lewis would gain half a second in the low-speed corners. And then in the high-speed corners, you would watch Norris just open up this insane gap. Do you recall this moment?
I do remember this moment, yes.
Yeah. You remember what happened at Silverstone last year? The exact same thing. Mercedes hasn't fixed what's wrong with their car. And there's just not any rear stability, it seems, at high speeds. And it's more than just the wing. It's the floor. It's the front wing. It basically the whole package, which is super strange. I mean, I don't know. This season, they have increase their gap. The gap to Red Bull has increased. They haven't made the progress that I thought that they would. And, you know, Mercedes can't run their car low. There's just a lot going on. And I don't know. What are your thoughts, Noah, on this whole issue?
Well, I think there's a reason Lewis Hamilton is coming over to the boys in red in Ferrari. I just don't think they have the pace to be good. They don't have it. They need – I know they have talked about just starting over. I don't know if that's the right idea about the car concept. Maybe there is some speed there because obviously you're not last.
Yeah.
And maybe you just need to find those extra seconds of speed that are somewhere in that car. But if we get midway through summer and you're still – not able to compete at all, might be time to throw out that car and just come up with a new one. Do something else. Move on from it. Just copy what Red Bull's doing at that point. Because obviously you have no idea how to make this car concept any sort of fast.
Yeah, and what I'm seeing is that the Mercedes has still run into the 2022 issues. You know, it's odd, and I don't know where they're losing the gains that they've been seeking, because really they changed your concept completely, and you know the car looks more comfortable. You're sitting further back. You remember Lewis complaining about that last year, that being a very big problem, and they really did change the. It's basically a new car. Except for the engine. But there's definitely something going on under this car that we don't see yet. There's something hiding in there. And I think, I don't know, man. I think they're walking a very thin line between downforce and slipperiness of the car, and they want the floor to work. But, man, nowadays it is not going well for them. So what do they do? Do they get rid of people? Do they put people back where they were fired? Like, no, if you were Toto Wolff, what would you do?
Probably fire. Well, I don't know. I'd fire some of my staff, but at this point, you kind of got to lock the doors for a couple nights and say, I know y'all get paid on a salary. You know, we'll pay you however long it takes, but we're going to lock this door. We're going to spend the night here. Hope you brought your sleeping bags. Hope you brought some snacks because we're going to work on this. All right, we're losing our best driver, or our oldest tenured driver, to Ferrari, and we cannot keep slipping. We have sponsors to make proud. We have fans to make proud. We got merch to sell and trophies to win. We're going to lock ourselves in, and we're going to sit down, and we're going to figure this out. That'd be my exact speech. I don't speak German or anything like that. I know Mercedes is based out of there.
They're based in Britain.
Based in Britain. Oh, all F1 teams are based in Britain now. But you got to figure out something. That's locking everybody in for a night. I don't know.
They do. There's a lot of work to be done and not a whole lot of time. And, I mean, whatever they can get done, they need to do it quickly. And that's going to be very difficult. And, you know, as I was talking about how bad it is to have pressure on someone like Alpine, you need that pressure in Mercedes.
Iron does indeed sharpen iron, especially when you got somebody there that's already done it.
Indeed.
A couple times. You can't get complacent.
And, you know, the era of F1 is completely different. And, you know, we have to leave respect for that as well, because Mercedes used to outspend everyone, so they outdeveloped everyone. And Red Bull, when they were in the lean years, they learned from their mistakes. They were down on power. So you know what they did? They made sure everything else was spotless so that they could be competitive on Sundays, even with a Renault engine that was not good. But Mercedes, having the best engine, didn't need to have everything spotless and refined. Even when they did win, they would have like 2016, there was a lot of engine-based retirements, and they still won the championship because they were just faster on track.
Every other Sunday, his tires would be gone.
Exactly. And it's so strange now that they didn't learn from their lean years in the early 2010s. But, you know, they have a lot to learn from the past few seasons, and they just keep going back and repeating the same mistakes, which is not something I will do. I'm not going to run this show long, Noah.
I was about to say, and a mistake that we're going to have to learn is how to end this show.
I don't want to, man.
On this, on time. I know you don't want to, but
I could stay here forever.
It's closing time. We can't go home. We don't have to go home, but we can't stay here. Thank you for watching us, folks. This has been yet another edition of the one and only Smooth Operators. Thank you for listening to us right here on Legal 91.1 FM. Remember to listen wherever you get your podcast if you miss something or just want to relive something as well. Thank you, and we'll see you on the other side. That's all we have today for Smooth Operators, Weagle's exclusive F1 show. In case you missed some of the show or just want to relive all your favorite parts, check us out on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. Till next time, this has been the smoothest operators of Weagle 91.1 FM.